first up, I just want to clarify one thing. Horse whisperer, horse trainer, because I know for some people who train horses, horse whispering is a dirty word, effectively. How do you see yourself?
Well, I think that the term horse whispering has been a little bit overused and maybe kind of a marketing term, especially since the movie with Robert Redford came out. But I'm okay with the term in this way because it refers to a quiet, gentle way of training horses and communicating with horses. Of course, sometimes you have to be firm. Sometimes you have to have good resolve and good intention. But my way of working with a horse tends to be rather quiet and precise, and I don't shout at them, and I don't get angry at them.
Yeah.
I want to be the great leader.
So you're trying to work with the animal rather than against the animal's instincts. What, trying to incorporate the instincts into the way you want it to behave?
Exactly. I really want to work with them like the herd leader does. That herd leader, that kind of leadership is... It's a kind of leadership that involves some smarts and not just, you know, force. That herd leader doesn't force the other members of the herd. She goes and they all follow because that's part of their survival.
Mm. Where did you learn to do this?
Horses taught me.
How so?
Well, I'm 64. I've been with horses since I've been 7. And started out as a polo player, and that's why I can really appreciate the polo cross and the wonderful horsemanship I've been seeing over there, and I think everybody should go down and watch these championships. Fantastic. But I started out as a polo player, but became more interested in the horse itself other than the sport. And I ran a trekking business on the island of Maui in the Hawaiian Islands for 25 years and developed my training skills through acquiring cast-off horses. I got them real cheap, horses that were problems for other people, and I had to sort them out and get them right and get them ready for the tourists to come on out and ride them.
Right. So we're talking about horses that had been, what, ill-taught or had been abused that you retrained, or both?
Both, absolutely. I would take on anything that, because I needed to get them cheap, and whatever they had, I would take on and I'd get them right and sort them out, and I had a very good success rate with that because I would pay attention to the response of the horse. If the horse was showing fear, that meant that I had to modify what I was doing a little bit because I wanted him to trust me. If he trusted me, he'd try to do what I would ask, and things would work a lot better.
And that is the key, is getting that trust between the two.
That is the key word, trust, absolutely.
How long does your approach tend to take? Because I've seen some people say they can effectively, and I use the term break a horse in, by gentle methods, but break a horse in a day. Do you take a longer approach, or can it be as quick as that?
Well, for demonstration purposes, I'll ride a colt within an hour.
Right.
But I don't recommend people do that. That's strictly a demonstration. I mean, I think that people should take their time. It could take a week, 2 weeks, a month, and go slowly. And that way you have a much better foundation for the horse and you in whatever you want to do with the horse. So sometimes, you know, people have a lot of horses, especially when it was a military time and we needed horses for the military. They have a lot of them. They had to move them in and move them out. I can understand expediency. But these days, I think that we have the opportunity to spend a little more time with them, build a better foundation.
What's the difference in the way the horse responds once you're using the horse between the gentle method and the traditional method of breaking a horse in?
Well, I don't want to create fear. So the traditional method of bronking a horse out, you know, tie up one leg and throw a saddle on him and then jump on him until he bucks and until he stops, that's one way of doing it. I think it tends to be a little traumatic for the animal. If you take your time, go slowly, there's generally no bucking involved, and things tend to go more towards trust and peace, a peaceful way of doing it, a peaceful approach. I think you get a lot more effort from the horse that way.
No, the other expression you often see, particularly in classified advertising, when people are trying to sell a horse, they describe a horse as bomb-proof, is a term that's often used. I'm not sure if it's used in the US, but it certainly is here. Does that quieter style of horse lead to, the bomb-proof horse or the more reliable horse?
Absolutely. I do a lot of bomb-proofing courses. I've done them for police departments, mounted patrol departments, and other places.
Where the horse really does have to be.
Oh, absolutely. And that approach during a bomb-proofing course tends to be quiet, and you can begin to expose a horse to very noisy, scary things and get them quite complacent about them.
Mm. You've been known to encourage children with disabilities
Absolutely.
To work with horses. Why so?
Well, I do something called equine-facilitated learning, which basically introducing children or adults to horses and facilitating the leadership and communication it takes to get a bond with the horse. If you have a child with a learning disability, he knows he's different. Mm. You know, he knows he's not like everybody else. And often these children come to me with low self-esteem. They don't have any confidence. They're very withdrawn. They're not very social. They're not able to communicate well. I have found that an appropriate introduction to a horse and allowing them or showing them that they can actually become a leader for such a big animal, well, their self-esteem goes through the roof. Their confidence comes up. All of a sudden, a child who's kind of hunched over and looking very withdrawn is standing up straight and tall. Autistic children tend to say words and speak more and become more communicative when after being with the horse. The magic of it is not about me. It's not about the human who's the facilitator. I'm just a guide. The magic comes from the horse. Many horses will really bond with a child or a learning disabled child better than an adult. The child is very happy just to be with the horse. The adult has an agenda, and the horse knows that.
Yes, I've known a few horses that have been able to work out an adult's agenda pretty quickly.
Yep.
When they see certain behaviors. They're very perceptive animals.
Extremely. That's how they survive. They need to be perceptive. They need to have intuition. They need to know your intentions because other animals eat them. He wants to know if you want to eat them for dinner.
Mm. Do horses like our company once they get used to us, or is it simply a that trust or that leadership role that they see a person in?
Well, they live in herds. So they live in groups. So they're a very relationship-based animal, and they really do want companionship. I think they prefer a companionship of another horse, their own kind. However, they are very happy to partner with us in all sorts of endeavors and agendas and goals. So I do think they really like to have companionship and company. A horse by itself, it's kind of a sorry critter.
Yeah.
You know, I recommend people get two horses, not just one.
Yeah. you have to have fairly deep pockets, though, for two horses.
Well, sometimes, yeah. I think that's they require good care and proper medical care and hoof care and good feed and so on. So, yeah.
Are too many people, I wonder if this is happening in the US and you've seen it happening around the world, there's a move towards the 5-acre block in many areas, and particularly in regional areas like this where people want to move out of town. They get a horse or they get a pony, and I worry sometimes that while often the people know what to do to look after it, there's also the reverse is true. People don't know how to look after animals in these circumstances. Do you see much of that?
I do, quite a bit. In the States, we call those 5-acre blocks gentlemen estates. Okay, so somebody, they get that property and they do get a horse or two. They don't know anything about it. Somebody sells them a horse. Frequently a young, inexperienced, untrained horse, and which I think is a little unfair because now you have a inexperienced human with an inexperienced horse. Not a good combination.
No.
So if somebody who doesn't know much about horses, I think that they should learn something about the horse first, how to properly maintain them and what's required for that horse to have a good life. If they just kind of go into it and have that horse as a lawn ornament, or they think that horse is going to just mow the lawn for them, that's very inappropriate and very unfair for the horse. And not a good situation.
How do you teach people your methods?
I teach them through example. I think being the example of what you want to teach is the best way of teaching. I don't like telling people what to do. I might make suggestions, and I say, well, watch this and see how effective it is, and then maybe you might like to give it a go and see if you can be as effective as I am with it. And that's really how I do it. I teach by example.
If, for example, you see someone yanking on the reins or shouting at a horse or behaving in a manner that you don't think is the way to do it or perhaps is not going to bring the best results, do you intervene or do you tend to stand back? Do you try and...
I try not to make somebody look stupid or that they don't know what they're doing. I need to be politically correct, and I need to be polite, and I need to be respectful. So I will say, if somebody's trying something, it's not working, I say, well, that's obviously not working, sir. Would you like to maybe consider that there's a different approach, or we could change this a little bit and see if what you're asking for can be a little bit more effective if you modify your attitude?
So and, much of it is beliefs. Attitude. Yeah.
Well, people want to die for their opinions and beliefs and attitudes. And yes, they're ours, and we're entitled to have them, but they don't always work in the real world. They're just our opinions. But as you, as we all know in today's age, that people are ready to die and blow you up because you don't share the same beliefs that they do.
Mm. How much do you enjoy your work, Franklin?
I am one of the most fortunate people on the planet. I love what I do passionately. I do six countries a year. Mm-hmm. I'm living out of a suitcase most all the time. And I am so grateful to have the life that I have. I am a lucky guy.
Enjoy your time in Ballarat at the Polar Cross event. I'm sure there'll be lots of people interested to learn some of your knowledge, some of your wisdom with animals.
I'm very grateful. I'll be there daily doing little one-hour demonstrations kind of later in the day. And I really recommend everybody come out there. It's just fantastic.